This week on Vaticano, preparing for a schism, German bishops meet the Pope and church leadership. Find out what really happened behind closed doors. And Catholic social media star Matt Frad comes to the Vatican to record his mission podcast. We talk with him about how to use modern media to bring Jesus to the people and the dangerous side effects of the internet on today's youth. And stay tuned for the third installment in our series on artificial intelligence in the faith. This week, we look at how AI begs us to rethink the very nature of the work of art and the creative process. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. Students and teachers gathered at the Paul VI Audience Hall at the Vatican on the morning of November the 28th to meet Pope Francis. The meeting was organized by the National Network of Schools for Peace and was entitled For Peace with Care. The Pope gave special mention to Pope St. John the 23rd and Martin Luther King Jr. Both were prophets of our time, Francis said.
E voi, ragazzi, ragazze, qual è il vostro sogno?
And you, boys and girls, what is your dream for the world of today and tomorrow? I encourage you to dream big, like John the 23rd and Martin Luther King. And that is why I invite you to participate next year in World Youth Day, which we will experience in Lisbon. Those of you who are able to come will meet with so many other boys and girls from all parts of the world, all united by the dream of fraternity based on faith in the God who is peace, the Father of Jesus Christ and our Father.
Il Padre di Gesù Cristo e Padre nostro.
The next World Youth Day in Lisbon will take place from August the 1st to the 6th, 2023. All young people between 14 and 35 years of age are invited. Registration for the event is now open. On the 28th of November, the Norwegian Institute in Rome commemorated the 500th anniversary of the death of one of the most influential bishops of Northern Europe, Erik Valkendorf. A memorial plaque was unveiled in the Church of Santa Maria dell'Anima, the Roman parish for German speakers. The Norwegian bishop, Erik Varden, held the vigil in Bishop Valkendorf's honor, followed by an academic symposium the next day. EWTN Norway and EWTN Germany did a digital live transmission of the event, celebrating the life of the Metropolitan Archbishop of Nidaros. He had been a prolific and ambitious figure in political and ecclesiastical life in Denmark-Norway, as well as in Europe at large. Bishop Valkendorf was a learned author, explorer, antiquarian, publisher, and church restorer. He died in Rome while waiting for the arrival of the newly elected Pope Hadrian VI. He had come to seek the pontiff's help against the King of Denmark-Norway, Christian II, who was limiting the church's juridical power.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. Pope Francis removed the entire leadership of Caritas Internationalis and appointed a temporary administrator to improve the organization's management. The Vatican issued a decree on November 22nd appointing Pier Francesco Pinelli, an Italian management consultant, as temporary administrator of the organization. A press release said an independent review found deficiency in Caritas Internationalis' management and procedures, seriously prejudicing the team's spirit and staff morale. Pope Francis has spoken out against violence in the Holy Land after two teenagers were killed in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The Holy Father said in an appeal at the end of his Sunday Angelus, "Violence kills the future, shattering the lives of the young and weakening hopes for peace." An Israeli boy was killed and at least 14 people were injured after two bombs exploded at bus stops on the outskirts of Jerusalem. The day before, a Palestinian boy was shot dead by Israeli forces during clashes in the city of Nablus in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Bishop Claudio Guggerotti is the papal ambassador and expert in Eastern languages and literature. He will lead the Vatican Dicastery for the Eastern Churches. Guggerotti has been Apostolic Nuncio to Great Britain since July 2020 and was Undersecretary of the Dicastery of Eastern Churches from 1997 to 2001. He is now responsible for the 23 Eastern Catholic Churches that are self-governing and in full communion with Rome. The Vatican said that China has violated the terms of its agreement with the Holy See. In a statement, it had said that it had noted with great surprise and regret a bishop had been installed as auxiliary bishop of Zhangji, a diocese not recognized by the Vatican, which did not conform to the spirit of dialogue, and what was established in the preliminary agreement on the appointment of bishops on September 22, 2018, Rome said. The Vatican calls its controversial deal with the Chinese government in Beijing a provisional agreement. In an emotional letter addressed to the people of Ukraine, Pope Francis wrote that he sees the cross of Christ and the tortures and sufferings endured by Ukrainians over 9 months of war. I would like to unite my tears with yours and tell you that there is not a day in which I am not close to you and do not carry you in my hearts and in my prayers, the Pope wrote. In the letter, the Pontiff also recalled the consecration of Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart of Mary on March 25th. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Anthony Johnson for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano. From November the 14th to the 18th, the German Bishops' Conference came to Rome for their ad limina visit. And the visit culminated with an audience with Pope Francis, in which the bishops discussed the issues that face the Catholic Church in Germany with the Holy Father. One of the main topics on the agenda of the meeting was the controversial Synodal Way. The members of the Roman Curia admonished their guests from Germany in a fraternal but emphatic manner, warning them not to jeopardize the unity of the Universal Church. Bishop Wolfgang Ippold, who is responsible for the Diocese of Gürtlitz in eastern Germany, spoke to EWTN during the ad limina visit.
Francis has made a few remarks in the past few months on the German Church. As far as his view of Germany is concerned, the decisive thing for me is the letter which he wrote to us in 2019, and which I always like to quote, sometimes in sermons, or in conversations with people. I believe that this letter was meant to show us a direction back then when we had decided on the Synodal Way. There were some pegs driven in at that point. But from my point of view, we did not always take his words seriously, and it is good to remember them.
Und es ist gut, an diese Worte sich zu erinnern.
Bishop Betzing conceded that those who see a danger in the German Synodal Way may find that the Vatican agrees with them. And the Vatican confirmed his suspicions, commenting that they took fault, above all, with the method, content, and structure of the Synodal Way. Bishop Ippold also emphasized that the Pope's concern about losing sight of Christ in the process was not unjustified.
Sometimes we expect too much from changes in the structures of our church, and too little of this spiritual background is clear. This is what the Pope means by putting Christ in view. He also wrote at that time about a pastoral conversion, and conversation can only ever go towards the Lord. It cannot go into any organizational forms. I think we have to remember this and get it into our heads.
Hinter die Ohren schreiben, wie man so sagt, und merken.
Many faithful fear that the Synodal Way will drift into a German schism. Many official documents of the Synodal Way, for example, openly call for a change in the church doctrine and tradition handed down. As an insider, you were involved from the very beginning. What is your impression?
is this concern about a German schism justified?
I
think we have to tell the faithful honestly. We cannot make any magisterial documents in Germany. We can't do that at all. We are a local church. We take on board what people bring into the synodal way. But we cannot make any valid changes. We can improve some of the things that we can regulate locally. That's what we're doing. But I very much hope that we have done there in March of next year, the synodal way will come to an end. That we will be able to feed some of it into the great synodal process of the world church. I think it is more important that we don't go our own way, but that we integrate ourselves into these large, colorful communities of the worldwide church.
Are you not worried that one day the Pope will say to the initiators of the synodal way, okay, now you have overdone it, stop, basta.
Stop, basta.
Ich glaube das nicht, dass das tun wird.
No, I don't think he would do that. I don't think it would be helpful at the moment either. But he will still name some critical points. He can do that, and that is also his ministry. As shepherd of the Universal Church, he must challenge the local churches when they pursue something that does not lead to unity, but rather brings about division.
Züge des Auseinanderdriftens an sich trägt.
Also Sie haben schon auch noch die
Hoffnung, so you still have hope that the synodal way can still somehow be brought within the worldwide synod on synodality.
Mit eingehegt werden kann.
Und vor allen Dingen die Weltsynode.
Yes, and above all, the World Synod deals. This is a big difference with the question, what is synodality? How does it work? It is something different from a parliament and so on. The Pope wants a new way of being a church. He doesn't want to change the doctrine, but is concerned with the fact that we must be a church in a different style. He has described that perhaps in the last decades, the hierarchical principle has gained the upper hand and that now the synodal principle must be added, must be revived, that has always existed in the church.
Dazu kommen muss, wieder verlebendigt werden muss. Das hat es ja immer in der Kirche gegeben.
When asked, the president of the German Bishops' Conference explained that neither the bishops in Germany nor the synodal way is working towards a schism from the Universal Church. We are Catholic and remain so, Bishop Bitzing said, but we want to be Catholic in a different way. What exactly this means and where the synodal way will lead in Germany is something that Pope Francis will certainly be watching closely. YouTube is one of the most visited sites on the internet. It was the second most searched website during the month of October, after Google, receiving 76.8 billion page views. There are currently 30,000 hours of video content uploaded to YouTube every single hour. For better or worse, YouTube shapes our culture. Matt Fradd hosts the popular podcast and YouTube channel, Pints with Aquinas, and uses social media to share the Catholic faith.
It's terrific.
We spoke to him about how he uses the internet to spread the gospel and what he worries about when looking to the future of social media.
Would St. Thomas Aquinas, would he be on social media today? What would he think our current media climate?
I don't know if I should be on social media today. It's a really good question. I've heard people say things like, if Thomas had the availability of the internet and computers, imagine what he would have done. But I don't know if that's true. Maybe he would have just become boring like the rest of us, watching Joe Rogan videos and Netflix. You look at the beautiful St. Peter's behind us, you think, well, could we do that today with the tools we have? No, I don't know if we can. And so I wouldn't venture a guess.
One of the things that I'm worried about is that a lot of the young people I come across, they have experiences, but it's all virtual. And I think that's beautiful in the sense that you can have more information, you can be in touch with things and connect with people. But at the same time, you're overexposed to things that you maybe shouldn't be exposed to. And I know something that you've spoken a lot about it is pornography. Seeing the generations go by and seeing your children get, you know, grow older, what impact do you think this digital age has had on them and us, and how, what do you see going in the future?
Well, I mean, I can only speak for my family. Our children, oldest is 14, down to six. We have four children, or eight rather. They change every year. It's difficult to keep up. They do not have smartphones. I would not buy that for them. We homeschool our children. We spend time with other families who also do not have smartphones, which can be very difficult. But this is partly why we moved to the area of the country that we are now in, so that we can live a more human life. And I would suspect that we're going to see more and more people becoming weird, like me, as people continue to feel the negative effects of technology, internet and smartphones, that more and more people are going to do this, because I want to raise holy children, or at the very least, interesting children. If they can't be holy, I'd like them to be interesting. And I think the internet's a great way to make your children boring and bland and uninteresting. I want my daughter, let's say, to learn how to journal about her feelings, to express them, not to publicize everything to the world, not to wonder what filter makes her face look the best or something like that. So I think if we want beautiful, interesting, holy children, then we should be very serious about regulating their internet use in a way that makes us look strange to the rest of the culture. Because if we don't look strange to the rest of the culture, that should be, why shouldn't we? We're Christians, we're supposed to be a little strange. I don't mean strange in the sense of odd or turning people off or something like that, sanctimonious. But our lives should look different. And I think it should look different in this area of online. And
I heard that being Catholic is the new punk rock.
Ah, yes, I think if we're serious about our Catholicism, then yeah.
Countercultural in a way.
Yep.
And then Matt, my last question is, you've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people. If you were to look back at all those interviews, all those guests, and you look back on that, what if you could say in maybe 1 minute or one through line or one thought what you've learned about getting closer to God?
What I personally have learned about getting closer to God?
Oh my goodness.
I would say that God is far better than I am, and He loves me far more than I love myself or can love other people. And that we live in a safe universe, certainly a universe riddled with evils, but our Father's heart is so good, and He is not narrow the way we are. His heart is not wretched and small the way ours are. He loves us with a Father's love, and we can trust in that love. I can trust in that love, and I can abandon myself to Him because He's trustworthy, even in my own wretchedness. Because as deep as my own wretchedness is, His love is all the deeper. And I should never look to my wretchedness apart from looking at His love. That's the only thing that enables me to stand it. But that all is well and all will be well. And with God, all manner of things will be well, I think.
Beautiful. Matt, thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you for all the work you do.
Yes.
Thank
God you. Bless you. Thanks.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. Christ is more of an artist than the artists. He works in the living spirit and the living flesh. He makes men instead of statues. Vincent van Gogh. Art is one of the most defining aspects of human civilization. From the dawn of time to our modern era, art has often showcased our highest ideals of beauty and technical prowess. As the great English art historian Kenneth Clark has said many times on his famous program, Civilization, to look back at the history of art is to look at the journal of mankind as it marches through time, highlighting man's desires, fears, and beliefs. Pope Francis has reflected this sentiment about art and the importance of beauty, saying on February the 17th of this year that beauty can touch in everyone what is universal, especially the thirst for God, crossing the limits of language and culture. The Holy Father places an important role on the authentic artist because he is able to speak about God better than anyone else. But where does our need to create art come from? From the undefinable conflict of emotions inside of us, resulting from the pain and routine of daily life? Or is it from someplace deeper, where we try to visualize our suffering and place that value into a place of worship and ritual?
Historically, we see that suffering, lack, limitation is a great incentive for humans to create. This seems to me to go against a purely materialistic and Darwinian view of human evolution. A very poignant example is found in Van Gogh, who, in one of his letters, expresses his suffering at not being able to have a family and not being able to have children, and that this drives him to generate thoughts instead of children. And this fact, nevertheless, makes him part of the human family.
There are obviously different levels of artistic experiences and representations of beauty. Some are banal and commercial. Others are simple, yet meaningful. And then there are those representations of beauty that it seems we see less and less of, but still call us. Those uniquely powerful and complex works of art that seem to confuse the modern mind, yet speak to our soul.
Sometimes we have to discover meaning in things that, at first glance, are ugly. They even cause us to look away, to look the other way. The reference to Christ crucified seems logical to me. Christ crucified is certainly not a beautiful, pleasant sight. Yet there is a beauty in the crucifix that is at a deeper level than what can be perceived by the senses. There is a formal, theological, metaphysical beauty.
As the benefits of modern science make our life easier, though the cost for this privileged existence of relative ease is that at times we feel as if we are cogs in the machine, slowly becoming more machine-like, then it begs the question, if we are becoming more machine-like, then is our art becoming more machine-like as well?
Mechanization of the creative process has always been a risk for art. Precisely because mechanization would seem to be the opposite of creativity. Creativity is free and unfettered, while mechanization is rigidly structured. The algorithm is not free to create, but rather learns a seemingly free process and replicates it. What the algorithm cannot or fails to grasp, however, is the innovative component in the use of rules, and thus the creative innovation, the rule breaking that cannot be taught. An algorithm cannot be taught about rule breaking precisely because such creative breaking is something that exceeds, or at least I think at present exceeds, the performance of a machine. Most importantly, because the machine has no desire to break the rule as a human being does, or to go beyond the rule as human creativity sometimes requires.
So if the primary factor in the creation of art is the innovative spirit to surpass the permitted boundaries, then one wonders if this creative spark is something that could ever be replicated in artificial intelligence.
I am rather skeptical because actually what seems to me to be characteristic of humans is precisely this spontaneous tendency to create. Creativity is a necessity for human beings. Just look at children. Children starting from a few months of age begin to draw and create. I don't think there is an essential difference between the child expressing himself through a drawing and God expressing himself by creating the universe. This drive to create something that is independent of us, that makes us somehow eternal, is typical of the human being, created in the image and likeness of God.
Spontaneo mi sembra proprio tipico dell'essere umano.